This is Between the Lines, WMUK's weekly look at books and writers. I'm Zinta Astars. A little girl disappears while walking home from school. 9 days later, her body is found in Allegan County. It's 1955 in Kalamazoo. 61 years later, Nicole and Robert Duchesne stumble across her grave and her tragic story. Their book, One Silent Voice, The Jeannie Singleton Story, is the result. Robert Duchesne recalls how their fascination with Jeannie's story began.
Basically, we were doing research for another book that we're writing, which is Twisted Kalamazoo, and we searched for the word mystery in the newspaper and came across the story of Jeannie's abduction. It was a 30-year anniversary article. And I pretty much spent the rest of the day doing research on the Jeannie Singleton case, and she was getting irritated with me and saying, we're supposed to be working other stuff, and decided instead of making it a chapter in that book to write an entire book on it.
Why are people so interested in this? It's not like there's, unfortunately, a shortage of murder stories.
Right. Unfortunately, I think a lot of what makes this book popular is so many people are still living that went to school with Jeannie Singleton that are from around that time. We even interviewed a detective that worked on the case who is still alive. And I think that's what it is. It resonates with the people who grew up in that era. And everybody says the exact same thing. That case changed everything in Kalamazoo. They say the same thing. The innocence was lost in Kalamazoo. Everything had to change after that.
Now, you say the innocence is lost, but when I started reading this, one of the first things that I noticed was, gee, we say all these pedophiles and molesters are cropping up today. I think we just hear about them more often. As they started looking at suspects, oh my goodness, there were so many.
Yeah. We have, when we decided to write the book, we obtained through the Freedom of Information Act her case file. So we have the case file from 1955 all the way into the mid-70s when once in a while a tip would come in. And the amount of people that they listed as pedophiles was absolutely incredible. And some of them, even under today's standards, would never be listed as pedophiles. If they had a different sexual preference, that was it. They were automatic suspects, which is very unfortunate for those people. But that's the way it was back then.
That's true. That did add to that count. But there were even young people, like 14-year-old that lived nearby.
Yes.
And then there was this huge manhunt. This little girl, 8-year-old girl, disappears walking home from school. And then there's this huge manhunt, which also included Western Michigan University students as well. With all that coverage that people were giving this, what was it that, why didn't it get solved?
Well, near the end of the book, we give a huge hint of why we think it didn't get solved. And not to give too much of the book away, but she was found in Allegan County, over in the Doster area. And that meant that Allegan County had to take control of the crime scene instead of Kalamazoo County, who was doing the actual investigation. Well, unfortunately, we have uncovered a relative of the main person of interest, who the police do believe is the killer.
Today, they believe that.
Oh, they believed it back in 1955. The detective that we interviewed that is still living, that was one of the first things he told me.
Yeah, and when we interviewed him, he said absolutely, he has no doubt that the person that we named in the book was the one that had committed the murder, but that he was unable to prove it.
This is Between the Lines on WMUK. I'm Zinta Astars. I'm speaking with Nicole and Robert Duchesne. I ask them why this mystery has remained unsolved.
When I start asking the current Michigan State Police detectives that has Jeannie's case, why we can't go back and do like DNA testing or anything.
Because that was my next question.
Yes.
Yeah, with the forensic tools that we have today.
It all came up missing in Allegan County. It all just suddenly disappeared. Everything that could link the suspect mysteriously just disappeared. So if the evidence had stayed with Kalamazoo County, I have no doubt that this person would have been charged and spent the rest of his life in prison.
So we're talking about some corruption here.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. It could have just lost it, but it does seem rather coincidental that even in the even in the case file, it specifically names his relative as being one of the people working on the case.
Now, has this case been reopened?
This case never was officially closed from what the Michigan State Police told
us. But it went cold.
It went very cold. But the suspect that we named in the book, they went and interviewed him back in 2013. He lived out of state. He lived down in Arizona at that point. And they traveled down to Arizona. When they came back, one of the detectives said, without a doubt, he was looking at Jeannie's killer. But without the DNA evidence to link the two together, they could not make an arrest. And unfortunately, the gentleman died in 2014.
The suspect?
The suspect.
Were there any other children? Because frequently when somebody murders one child, there are others. It's not something that they seem to be able to stop. Were there any other suspicions with this suspect, with other kids?
There was, you know, I tried to find any evidence of something similar to this in Arizona because he left in the late 50s and they went down to Arizona. I tried to find it, but Arizona is much harder to research. They're not as user-friendly as Michigan is with trying to get case files and whatnot. I had to already know dates of conviction, dates of arrest, and obviously I didn't know any of that. So yeah. I was not able to trace that back in Arizona to see if he continued. Now, what's interesting with this whole timeline in 1955 is 3 months, almost to the day that Jeannie was abducted and raped and murdered, there was another little girl over by Howell by the name of Barbara Gaza. Exact same thing. She looks just like Jeannie. She was abducted on her way home. They found her, I do believe, in a gravel pit area. Same thing. She was raped. She was murdered. There were similarities between the two, but they could never totally 100% connect the two. But it always makes me wonder.
Yeah. There's this interesting scene at the beginning of the book when you're just starting to get interested in this and you're looking for Jeannie's grave. And I was mesmerized with that too. It almost seems like this little girl was reaching out to you from the beyond to point you to her grave that you were having some difficulty finding.
Yeah, we could not find it, at all. And I had been through that area. We both have been through that area countless times, and we just could not find it. And it was just really funny because it was cold outside, and we were freezing, and we were just about to give up. And I was like, okay, Jeannie, we're just trying to find you. Where are you? And this little red plastic flower kind of blew onto my foot, and I went, well, okay, I didn't think anything of it. And then I just happened to look down into my right, and there was Jeannie's grave.
Wow.
So, yeah. So,
now, well, that little girl deserves justice, but
she does. She does. Unfortunately, it's going to be denied justice.
I'm Zinta Astars. You've been listening to WMUK's Between the Lines, our weekly look at books and writers. I've been speaking with Nicole and Robert Duchesne, authors of One Silent Voice, The Jeannie Singleton Story. The Duchesnes will be reading at Kazoo Books on Saturday, April 2nd at 1 p.m. And join us every Tuesday at this time for Between the Lines. Thanks for listening.